back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about the prerequisites to a proper Islamic upbringing. We said accepting responsibility, fixing your own issues, and now knowing that, taking notice that ages 0 to 8 are the most important. It's actually the time where you have to raise your children. Mm-hmm. But always talking when we're saying 0 to 8, are we literally talking 0? Like, how about the first few months? Because how much is there for a child to learn in the first few months, I mean, regarding morality and self-confidence and things like that?
Well, we can, I mean, I wouldn't even, if we have to look at it from an Islamic perspective, Islam goes even beyond the child, beyond the
before birth, zero.
Before zero, before the birth of the child. See, when the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam says, اختاروا لنطفكم فإن الأرق دساس, he said, choose for your kids. You know, the right, because you know, al-irq, if we translate it, is DNA. Is that DNA could be a treacherous thing, right? Because you don't know what's going to come, so you have to choose the right mother, right? Because the right mother from the right family would have what, the right DNA, which means that DNA itself, even scientists they say it carries traits. It carries traits like bravery, generosity, and so on and so on. It carries traits. And that's why Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he wanted to, after Fatima al-Zahra, he wanted to get married, he wanted his brother Aqil, he said to him, اختار لي امرأة أولدتها الفحول من العرب. Choose a woman for me that was being given birth by the warriors of the Arabs. Why? So he wants a woman that actually carries the genes of bravery in her. And gave you Al-Abbas alayhi salam. So this is what, when we talk, we're not going to zero. We have to go from the beginning if we want to be precise.
Okay.
So if we want to be precise, we got before zero.
But now, I mean, like, in the first few months, a child is mostly discovering what an object is, the rules of physics and stuff like what things taste like. I mean, are we literally saying that there are things that parents can do at that age that will affect their future?
Can, of course. Mm-hmm. And this has been proven even on the field. For example, you go on YouTube and you see a lot of clips of parents who teach their kids at a very young age, like even a month old, few months old, they teach them a few things, either through the process of making them listen to music, they put headphones on them or music surrounding them, or they make certain sounds, or they have, I've seen a lot of kids with card tricks, like they show them cards and the child interact to the cards and they can tell what's in the cards. So the child himself, his brain is fully working, it's fully functioning. And at that age, it's a sponge, right? It just absorbs everything. That's why it is absolutely ready for teaching and learning. Mm-hmm. So at this age, he might be young, but his brain is fully wide, fully open, and he's absorbing everything inside.
So heads up, folks, we're talking literally from 0 to 8, and we will cover all of this in our future episodes. We're just taking a broad overlook of what you have and the prerequisites, basically, until we get to the methods. That's all the time that we have, unfortunately. If you missed it, don't worry. You can always download an archive of this episode and all our previous episodes from our website. Simply visit parstoday.com. That's parstoday.com. Find the link of Call of Islam Radio and you'll find our show right there with all the episodes ready for downloading. You can also email us at englishradio@irib.ir. That's englishradio@irib.ir. And find us on social media. Simply search at Call of Islam Radio on Twitter, Instagram, Telegram, and YouTube. Until next episode, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is the way of life. A complete way, it's a complete way.
Round the world with reporters.
Yemen since Ansarullah movement blamed the United Nations for the Saudi atrocities committed against Yemeni children. The movement said the UN has always been providing the political cover-up for the Saudi war crimes. This came after the United Nations added the Ansarullah movement to its blacklist of groups for violating children's rights.
We were not surprised by this decision because the UN had removed the name of Saudi Arabia from its blacklist of the groups violating children's rights. The United Nations have not taken any real steps to protect the rights of Yemeni children who die every day due to continued blockade on food, medicine, and fuel. I believe that this is a resounding scandal for the Secretary General of the UN, who began his second term with this decision.
The member of the Supreme Political Council, Mohammed Al-Houthi, dismissed as baseless the UN accusation, saying it did not refer to an investigation on the ground as the movement has demanded. Meanwhile, the Minister of Information said the UN has turned a blind eye to the ongoing Saudi blockade on Yemenis, which causes the death of tens of Yemeni children on a daily basis. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war against Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed thousands of civilians, including women and children, and turned the war-torn country into the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations.
Observers say the United Nations' blacklisting of Ansarullah is politically motivated and has no relation to the humanitarian situation in Yemen. They believe that the UN must take real actions against the Saudi blockade if it has real intentions to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana.
Supporters of Palestinians who struggle for their rights and justice gathered in front of the headquarters and branches of RAI, the Italian national broadcaster, to protest against what they call biased coverage of the ongoing conflict between Israel and Palestine. The demonstration took place in several cities, including Rome, Milan, and Naples. Protesters shouting "Shame" and "Israel go away" accused the national broadcaster of misrepresenting the complexity of the latest Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, as well as ridiculing the truth.
The reports on the Israeli-Palestine conflict that RAI TV has been airing were not up to the standards one would expect from a public broadcaster. Italian people have been clever enough to understand the truth. It's no coincidence that pro-Palestine demonstrations were held in 25 cities across the country. The reports never mentioned the Israeli occupation, never once.
People attending Rome's demonstration said the Italian media outlets faced no ethical dilemmas when it came to not reporting on the Israelis who were trying to steal Palestinians' houses in Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem or Quds.
Italian mainstream media generally covers Palestinians when they are either protesting or physically confronting Israeli aggression, with the outcry broadly described as escalation of violence. Quite the contrary when it comes to describing Israel's increasing night raids on Palestinian homes and attacks by Israeli settlers on Palestinian farmers, Italian media hardly refers to an escalation of violence.
Last Saturday, thousands of people flooded the central square in the Italian capital to show their support to the Palestinians, but no mainstream media outlets bothered to cover the demonstration.
The media didn't elaborate on what was happening in Italy. They showed, you know, London, New York, other places in the world, and they didn't really focus on all of Italy was protesting against this occupation.
Unfortunately, nothing will change if the UN and all major countries continue not to take a firm stance on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
A national demonstration dubbed Stop the Israeli Occupation will be held in Rome on Saturday, May 29. Thousands of Italians are expected to join the rally from all over the country. Max Civili, Rome.
Just a quick one. When are you going to...
He might have emerged the loser in a bitter internal power struggle inside Downing Street. But Dominic Cummings is reminding his former allies inside the Conservative Party that a wounded animal is at its most dangerous. Prime Minister Johnson is standing by his health secretary, even after Cummings leaked messages where Johnson branded the man in charge of handling Britain's COVID crisis as expletive hopeless and suggested handing over some of his responsibilities.
Dominic Cummings is doing this because he's his own axe to grind following his sacking as Johnson's political aide. It's clear I don't think we could trust him as far as you could throw him, but at the same time he's shedding light on what seems to be a chaotic and inefficient government whose handling of the beginnings of this pandemic was truly disastrous in terms of the number of people dying, the highest in Europe.
In an escalation of tensions between Cummings and Hancock, MPs were told back in May that the health secretary had lied to the prime minister about testing hospital patients before they were released into care homes at the start of the pandemic. In a 7,000-word blog, Cummings described Johnson and co. of rewriting history and said if Number 10 is prepared to lie so deeply and widely about such vital issues of life and death last year, it cannot now be trusted either on COVID or any other crucial issue of war and peace.
Hell hath no fury like a special advisor scorned, and Dominic Cummings is making life inside the Conservative Party for his former colleagues an absolute nightmare. After all, he's the man with an agenda and the inside information to follow through.
Cummings's refusal to slink off into the political wilderness must be a source of great concern for the government, who must be dreading what he will reveal next.
I don't think he's particularly bothered about the damage he might inflict on the Conservative Party, or indeed his former boss Boris Johnson. Clearly his anger over his sacking has overcome any reservations he's got.
This might be unfolding like a poorly written telenovela, but the public will do well to be reminded that these individuals at the center of this political drama, they were the ones in charge, making decisions that may well have cost thousands of people their lives. Amina Taylor, London.
For ages, joining the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has been a long-sought dream for Ukraine. NATO countries have a mutual defense pact, meaning if one nation is attacked, the others will join in their response. By this, Kiev, which has been engaged in a domestic conflict with pro-Russian forces, is seeking to get NATO's help to get rid of the militias. On Monday, the alliance's annual summit in Brussels wrapped up with the release of a joint communique that reaffirmed NATO's 2008 decision for Ukraine to become a member through a Membership Action Plan, or MAP, without setting a timetable. Shortly afterward, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appeared to announce a change on Twitter shortly before U.S. President Joe Biden began a news conference in Brussels where he was attending a NATO summit. He tweeted that NATO leaders confirmed that Ukraine will become a member of the alliance. But NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg made it clear that no such action was imminent. Stoltenberg said, to agree on the membership action plan, you need a consensus among 30 allies. This was the focus of the summit. Biden stressed that Kiev does not have the go-ahead to join NATO. The U.S. president said Ukraine needs to clean up corruption and to meet other criteria before it gets into the action plan. However, he affirmed Washington's support for Ukraine's territorial integrity. Biden also met with its Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin for the first time in Geneva, Switzerland on Wednesday. The two discussed a number of issues, including resumption of diplomatic ties and the return of expelled envoys, but apparently made no mention of Ukraine's membership in NATO. On Thursday, the Kremlin expressed concern over talks for Ukraine to join the alliance. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Ukraine's NATO membership would be a red line for Moscow, noting that Russia is watching the issue closely. Ukraine has been locked in a tense tug-of-war with pro-Russian forces ever since the Crimean Peninsula rejoined Russia following the ouster of Ukraine's President Viktor Yanukovych in 2014. The conflict on the country's east has killed more than 4,000 people.
The General Confederation of Lebanese Workers, the country's labor force umbrella, called for a nationwide strike across the country. Several streets in major cities and a number of key highways were blocked. Banks, several large companies, and many shops also remained closed. Head of the General Labor Union stressed in the gathering that all institutions of Lebanon are threatened, as are the citizens of the country.
We need to face this collapse of institutions through social solidarity and cooperation to preserve what is left of Lebanon and the workers of the country. This cannot happen without a salvation government which confirms political stability, paving the way for economic solutions.
The crisis has deeply stressed the budget for subsidies on essential goods. Power cuts have increased in many areas, which are seeing only 2 hours of electricity per day. People are lining up at gas stations for up to 2 hours to get limited liters of petrol in their cars, while supermarkets and pharmacies are running short of supplies.
The General Labor Union in Lebanon has declared that all members, including economic bodies, Organization of Merchants, and even the Association of Banks in Lebanon, back the strike and allow their employees and workers to take part in gatherings and protests. And while this strike is to protest the main dire economic situation in the country, it is also to put pressure on the political factions to form a much-needed cabinet.
Parliament Speaker Nabi Hibiri has declared an initiative to help mediate stalled talks to form a government. The disagreement is mostly prominent between Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri and President Michel Aoun, who don't see eye to eye on the general framework of a cabinet lineup. Members of the parliament close to the speaker believe this initiative is the last resort.
This initiative is the last opportunity for the Lebanese to see some agreement on a cabinet. All political factions inside Lebanon backed this proposal, and it was also endorsed by regional and international sides, since it provides a plan for a comprehensive solution. Speaker Barry has put forth a practical framework and tactical steps to try to loosen the knot on debated issues, but this requires mutual trust and reaching a common denominator where the collapse will continue and we will all regret it then.
The World Bank has labeled Lebanon's economic crisis as one of the world's worst since the 1850s. Lack of accountability has also been one of the major reasons behind an extended, multifaceted crisis in Lebanon. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Jerusalem is closer than ever is the slogan of a symposium held in Yemeni capital Sana'a to discuss the Israel's long-lasting atrocities against the Palestinian nation. The organizers say the recent 11-day war has proved that the third generation of Palestinians is more capable of standing against Israel. They say the resistance has got stronger despite the normalization efforts of some Arab states.
The axis of resistance was able to prove its existence despite all the conspiracies of the closest people. There are Arab countries that are considered close to the Palestinian resistance, but unfortunately, they continue to stab the resistance through normalization with the Zionist entity. And these countries are the ones who seek to weaken and bring down the resistance. Today, the third generation of the Palestinians is capable more than ever of defending Palestine against Israel's aggression.
The gathering also hailed the support of allies for Palestinian cause, including Iran, who they say has always backed the Palestinian nation overtly. The participants said Iran has played a key role in changing the balance of the war between Palestine and the Israeli regime.
Since the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran 40 years ago, it has made Palestine its main issue, as Imam Khomeini declared that Iran's independence will not be complete without the liberation of Palestine. The Palestinian cause is at the heart of Iran's political strategy, and despite the conspiracies that Iran has gone through, it still supports the Palestinian resistance and has been a key factor in changing the equation of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
The Palestinian cause is also an issue of consideration for several other Islamic states, including Yemen. Last month, Yemenis launched a fundraising campaign to support the Palestinian resistance groups, even though they are going through a tragic humanitarian situation due to the ongoing Saudi war on their country.
People here believe that armed struggle is the only way to stand against aggressors. They say the recent victory proved that the Palestinian nation is on the right path to regain its rights. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Push back, constrain, and engage. These are the core elements contained in a European Commission policy proposal which has just been presented relating to Russia. The 27-country bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says the EU must be realistic.
And prepare for a further downturn of our relations with Russia, which are right now at the lowest level. And this further downturn is the most likely outlook for the time being.
The new policy proposal suggests the EU must push back against Russia's human rights violations and international law breaches. This mostly relates to Ukraine and Georgia. The EU must constrain attempts by Moscow to undermine EU interests. Here the document talks about cyber attacks. But the bloc should engage with Russia on COVID-19, climate change, travel visas, and efforts to save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal. Big claims require big evidence, and the EU has never come forward with a shred of evidence, the Kremlin insists. There are many experts who believe the EU is going down the wrong path.
The West has an interest, an institutional self-interest, in aggravating the crisis with Russia, a crisis which need never have started in the first place, but which was aggravated by the way the West supported the most radical elements in Ukraine.
Borrell was asked about the EU's dependency on Russia's energy. He responded, there is no mention of this subject at all in the policy document. The Commission proposal contains a provision for additional sanctions on Russia, but EU leaders are divided over the effectiveness of such measures. They will make their final decisions on the matter during a summit here at the European Council next week. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
After two perilous days and a difficult night, 69-year-old activist Nicholas Georges has returned to ground level after mounting a huge crane overlooking the US Embassy in London. Armed with little more than a Palestinian flag, Georges risked his life in the daredevil stunt to raise awareness of Israeli crimes against the Palestinians.
Every day, day in, day out, demolishing more and more Palestinian homes. The Palestinians have no rights. Even their electricity and their water is taken from them. Israel is the fourth largest military power, nuclear military power in the world. The Palestinians have nothing.
Apart from the obvious risk of falling to his death, the two-day ordeal has been very challenging in other ways too, as explained by fellow activists supporting him from the ground.
Apart from the climb itself, which was huge, he has suffered from the cold at night because he couldn't fit a sleeping bag onto his backpack. So he spent last night very cold, and he sent a few messages saying, I'm really, really cold. Luckily, because he's so high up, the crane actually caught the first morning sun. So he was the first person to actually warm up. But now he's suffering from the heat, because obviously there's no shade. One, two,
three, as supporters cheered Mr. George's successful landing, he was unable to speak directly to us, as any media talks after this action could affect his possible court battle to come.
So there you have it. Nick is back down safe and sound. But the battle will not end here. After a visit to hospital, Nick will likely be brought in for questioning by the police and potentially even charged for some of the conduct over the past couple of days. Then could come a lengthy court battle which Nick will have to fight against as well. But the lessons that can be taken from this is that the activists behind these brave actions know the consequences, but they still do it anyway, meaning that until there is a solution for the oppressed Palestinian people, this type of action will continue to occur, not just in the UK, but worldwide, possibly as well. Robert Carter, London.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip held demonstrations in several parts of the enclave in response to the return of the controversial flag march in East Jerusalem Al-Quds. The protesters say the move is aimed at provoking Palestinians' anger. They burnt Israeli flags and vowed to defend Jerusalem Al-Quds with all means.
The Israeli regime is responsible for the consequences of its crimes in Jerusalem Al-Quds. It's provoking us by holding this flag march. Palestinian resistance in all parts of Palestine announces its readiness to respond to the violations in Al-Aqsa Mosque. The international community should stop such violations.
The extremist flag march passed through the old city's Damascus Gate and entered the Muslim Quarter. This amid a fragile ceasefire in the Gaza Strip following the recent Israeli aggression. that claimed nearly 250 Palestinian lives. The flag march caused Hamas to warn that the tensions in the Gaza Strip will break out again after Israel's 11-day escalation on the enclave.
Our Palestinian people are all united in defending Jerusalem al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Our message is clear that we will not allow Israel to impose its plans of stealing our land and holy places. We will sacrifice everything for Palestine, and the resistance is ready to fight back. We do not trust any Israeli ceasefire, and we are committed to it as long as Israel keeps it.
Palestinian resistance in Gaza announced its readiness for any conflict against the Israeli regime in response to the violations against Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds.
Any Palestinian would feel angry for what is happening in Jerusalem al-Quds and the Israeli violations of our rights. We are all united in facing this occupation. We are supporting the resistance and we are proud of its achievements in defending us. We will not give up al-Quds and our holy places, and the Israeli plans there will fail because we are the true owners of the land.
The controversial flag march in Jerusalem al-Quds risks reigniting tensions with Palestinians, both in the occupied territories and the Gaza Strip. Hamas has warned that the march will trigger a new conflict for defending al-Quds and al-Aqsa Mosque. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
The U.S. State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs said the U.S. envoy to Yemen has met with the director of USAID to discuss the need for more donors to provide additional humanitarian funding to address the growing crisis in Marib. Experts believe that this step is an attempt by the U.S. to provide new weapons to its tools in Marib, including terrorist groups who protect its agenda in the oil-rich province.
The continued advancement of the Yemeni army toward liberating Marib prompted the United States to use the humanitarian crisis to supply the terrorist groups in Marib with weapons so that the conflict could not be prolonged. U.S. push for peace has no basis in reality, and continued siege on the Yemeni people is the proof.
Observers said the USAID plays a suspicious role wherever it exists, adding that it uses the humanitarian and relief work as a cover-up for its military and intelligence activities.
The U.S. Agency for International Development is an intelligence agency. It shows the humanitarian aspect, but it hides a lot of illegal activities, including supporting terrorist groups with weapons. The United States will not accept peace unless its conditions are met. Washington is the one who leads the war in Yemen and cannot be a peacemaker.
Last year, the Yemeni army found large quantities of weapons carrying the logo of USAID in Al-Bayda and Marib front lines after recapturing areas that were controlled by Daesh and Al-Qaeda.
Yemenis believe that the U.S. is directly involved in the deadly war against their country. They say it is their right to liberate their lands from any foreign existence, as well as terrorist groups who serve the interests of the U.S. and Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
A report released recently by the United Nations Refugee Agency finds that more than 82 million people across the globe were forcibly displaced by war, persecution, the climate crisis, and other factors by the end of 2020, a record high that one international aid group called an epic failure of humanity. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jake Johnson Ryder. This article is published under the heading Epic Failure of Humanity. Global displaced population hits all-time high. Stay tuned for more. A report released recently by the United Nations Refugee Agency finds that more than 82 million people across the globe were forcibly displaced by war, persecution, the climate crisis, and other factors by the end of 2020, a record high that one international aid group called an epic failure of humanity. The UN's annual Global Trends in Forced Displacement Assessment estimates that girls and boys under the age of 18 account for 42% of the 82.4 million people who have fled their homes in search of safety and basic human dignity. Nearly a million children were born as refugees between 2018 and 2020, the report shows. Behind each number is a person forced from their home and a story of displacement, dispossession, and suffering. They merit attention and support, not just with humanitarian aid, but in finding solutions to their plight, said Filippo Grandi, the High Commissioner of the United Nations for Refugees, UNHCR, adding, "The tragedy of so many children being born into exile should be reason enough to make far greater efforts to prevent and end conflict and violence." Though the deadly coronavirus pandemic led countries around the world to close off their borders to refugees and asylum seekers, many people still fled across national lines in 2020, the ninth consecutive year in which the number of forcibly displaced people has reached a record high. According to the new UN report, 26.4 million people were living as refugees in 2020, and more than two-thirds of those who fled abroad came from just five countries, including Syria, 6.7 million, Afghanistan, 2.6 million, South Sudan, 2.2 million, and Myanmar, 1.1 million. The UN figures show that in addition to those who were forced by circumstance to leave their home countries, 48 million people were internally displaced by the end of last year, up from 45.7 million in 2019. Climate change is driving displacement and increasing the vulnerability of those already forced to flee, the report states. Forcibly displaced and stateless people are on the front lines of the climate emergency. Many are living in climate hotspots where they typically lack the resources to adapt to an increasingly inhospitable environment. The dynamics of poverty, food insecurity, climate change, conflict, and displacement are increasingly interconnected and mutually reinforcing, driving more and more people to search for safety and security. Jan Egeland, Secretary General for the Norwegian Refugee Council, said in a statement recently that despite the staggering statistics, world leaders have been inept to resolve the greatest emergency of our generation. Far more people are on the move today than anything and any time during the Second World War. Yet we say we live in an unprecedented era of global peacetime, he added. We need to rewrite tomorrow's history books to reflect today's reality that we live in an unprecedented era of persecution and suffering. Absent dramatic action from the international community to end conflicts, combat the climate crisis, and mitigate other major factors driving forced displacement, the UN report warns that forecasts for 2021 are equally worrying, with some of the world's worst food crises, including in displacement-affected countries such as South Sudan, Syria, and the Central African Republic, at risk of turning into famine. The question is no longer if forced displacement will exceed 100 million people, but rather when, the report states. Clearly, the need for preventing conflicts and ensuring that displaced people have access to solutions has never been more pressing than now.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station. Choo choo ka choo. It's the Youth Station for you. I'm your humble host, Muzaffar Haider. And here in the studio today, we have with us our dearly beloved friend, Mehdi Najafi. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having us. And
a man who needs no introduction.
Oh, yeah, precisely. Precisely.
It's good to have you. So you're a married man, right?
Oh, yes, I am, luckily.
Any regrets?
Any regrets? Yes, why not sooner?
Ahsan, no. Good answer. That's the topic that we're actually discussing today, about really? Unrealistic thoughts when it comes to marriage. There's lots of expectations that people have before they get married, and because of those expectations, their marriages either fall apart or, you know, they're just very,
they
very
don't lucky. Happen sometimes.
Or they don't, yeah, they don't happen.
You know.
So, like, where do these unrealistic thoughts come from? In
society?
Fact, first of all, what are they?
Yeah, what are they? I don't know. But, like, I'll give you a closer example of my elder brother. Well, he's given up on those unrealistic things that he had in mind. But there was one of these things that he was like, all right, fine. I need to have a minimum income of this much, he had in his mind. And I need to own a house before I get married. These two are enough for me for someone to be hindered in getting married.
And sometimes the woman has similar expectations. She's from like, he needs to have this, he needs to have a bank account, he needs to have a good job, he needs to... Whereas the Islamic ethos is actually the opposite. It's like, you get married, and I will give you risk.
Yeah.
I will increase your risk. But then we're expected for our risk to increase before we get married. Kind of backwards.
Yeah, I know. Mm. And some people... Well, there's a tradition where this guy was already married and he didn't have enough risk to support his family, and he was told to remarry and remarry until his risk actually got opened. Well, I'm not trying to promote...
Let's hope our wives are not listening.
we hope, but yeah. So, yeah, you know, as you said, I was trying to explain that getting married is the reason your risk is going to get increased.
Mm. There's actually a really funny story where this guy, he has nothing. He's like, you know, just a regular guy. Like me and you back in the day before we got married, you know, we would wait until Shahriya comes through so that we can go and buy a burger. Do you remember those days?
Yeah.
The good days.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he had nothing, and then he gets married. Allah increases his risk. He gets a house. He has a car now. He has all the usual stuff. His uncle comes to him and he says, hey, how did you get all this stuff? The kid says, well, Allah said, get married and I will increase your risk. That's what I did. I got married and Allah increased my risk. The uncle says, hey, hold on a second. I don't believe that. No, what did you really do? Come on, give me a clue. The kid says, no, really. I just got married and Allah increased my risk. I haven't been doing anything really differently. Third time the uncle asks, and so the kid goes, all right, fine, you got me. I'm going to tell you the truth. Basically, I have this Jewish friend, and he told me, if you get married, I'm going to provide everything for you. I'm going to give you your finances, your house, your mortgage, your car, and everything. And the uncle goes, ah, there it is. The youth goes, actually, no, I just made that up.
Yeah.
But I find it so strange that you would believe in this generous Jewish guy over Allah.
Who's actually made the promise.
Huh?
Who's actually made the promise,
you know? Right. Now, sometimes it's an unbelievable criteria. I want a superwoman.
Besides the additional things that come into marriage, there's things that we have in our mind about the partner that we're going to marry. For example, I need a perfect man. You know, he's got the perfect akhlaq and he's got nothing negative in his traits.
Mm.
There's one thing that we need to understand is marriage isn't something, you know, you don't get everything ready in there. Mm-hmm. And you know, go on from there and just live your life perfectly as you dreamt of it. You have to compromise, or you have to be patient, you know. You have to learn to grow together as a partner. And it's even more beautiful, you know, because you go through those different phases of your personality through that with that person.
Yeah.
You know, which increases the beauty of that.
There's actually, off the back of that, there's actually a beautiful hadith that says that one who marries for beauty or for wealth will be deprived of both of them the moment they get married. And one who marries for iman, he is the one who will get both of those things.
That's mind-blowing.
You know? But this is what society has done through movies, through the media. It's created a kind of false expectation of what you would expect your life partner to be like. You know, we have all these standards of beauty now. We have all these glamorous icon celebrities, and we all think that I want that.
Right. What about this? How many people are there? They really want to get to know their partner before they get married. What do you think about that? And they're like, oh, well, I don't. Well, the way it is in the West, people spend years and years together before they actually decide to get married, isn't it?
Engagement.
Engagement period? No. I'm not talking about Muslims generally.
Right. Yeah.
And that has seeped into the Muslim youth mentality also. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not in the Stone Age. We just decide to get married, and we don't even know the person we're getting into with marriage, right? What do you think about that?
I think it's very bad.
Yeah, but like,
it's awful. that's one of the baggages of Western society, isn't it? It's one of those evil kind of outlooks seeped into our
thought. Me, as a critic, for example, say, fair enough, but I need to know the person I need to live with. You know, I might not like most of the things that person has after I get married. And is it not better to know the person and enter a lasting marriage than not knowing a person, getting into a marriage and, you know, ending up having an unsuccessful marriage?
Well, you need to know certain things, definitely. You need to know certain things, and Islam tells us to know about those things. But we're going to come back to this question. Very good question that Brother Mahdi Najafi has raised. Inshallah, before we come back to that, though, we're going to go for a short break.
We just have to open our eyes, our hearts and minds. If we just look right, we'll see the signs. We can't keep hiding from the truth and let it take us by surprise. Protect us in the best way. Guide us every single day.
Before we went to the break, we were discussing about how certain people think that they need to spend time together before they get married. They need to know each other before they get married. My counter-argument, Brother Mahdi Najafi, would be, well, hold on a moment. You never know somebody. It takes a lifetime to even scratch the surface of what another person is. It
takes a lifetime to scratch the surface of one's own self.
Of one's own self, This idea that, you know, you need to get to know somebody before you marry them is an illusion. It's not a reality.
But there has to be something that is standardized. And
Yes, so Islam does say certain things. So number one, check the person's iman. How? For example, you check their salah. Are they praying salah on time? Right? Mm. What is their connection to the Ahlul Bayt? Another thing is you check their family. Got to check what kind of family they come from. Family has a huge impact on the person themselves, right?
And lastly, their friends.
Oh, yeah, and of course, their friends.
You know.
Now, these are all things that don't take like a significant amount of time to get to know.
If I'm a person that is deceptive, you know, I would easily form myself in a shape and manner that I could deceive another person. But the friends that I choose are the people closest to my personality that, that I'm going to hang around with and I'm going to choose.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally, it's next to impossible that I phase myself in a manner that my friends are different to the personality that I already have, you know.
Right.
So,
well, when it comes to friends, though, there's a beautiful hadith that says that if you want to know a person's deen, then you should look at their friends. Look at their circle of friends. That is their actual deen.
Yeah, that's actually interesting because nowadays, deen isn't even a priority now for us, you know. So that's where we get beat, understand? If we don't have that as a priority, later on in life, if priority was, as you mentioned, the hadith, beauty or money, both of them are perishable and very vulnerable at any time, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
But iman is something that is going to last, and that's something that's, that might as well attract beauty and sustenance.
So personal question for you. Did you have an arranged marriage? Did your parents choose your spouse? Or
It was both. It was both. You know,
bit of both.
Bit of both. Yeah.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah. I was one of the few lucky ones that had the option to have a bit of both. You know. I got to know my wife a bit. You know, as we mentioned, a bit before I got married, and the more you know about them after getting married, the more there is to marriage. Understand?
Yeah.
So if you think you've gotten to know the person. You've gotten to know the person before marriage, then there's not much left within the marriage for you anymore, you know. I don't want to say that, you know, marriage is just about knowing each other. There is much more to marriage, but a huge part of marriage is getting to know each other and changing and forming yourself in a manner to be compatible with the other person within the guidelines that Islam has provided us.
Which one do you think is better, actually, like arranged marriage or love marriage? They call it love marriage, but, you know, that's kind of deceptive because that means that arranged marriage doesn't have love in it.
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah.
Let's say, like, your choice. I mean, the person's choice or the parent's choice? Like, which one is better?
For me, I don't think I can say either one is better than the other. As we've mentioned, there are specific guidelines that Islam has provided us, right? As long as we're not... there's one thing that we might not be ordered to do in Islam. For example, we're ordered to respect our parents in Islam. That's fair enough. But we're not we've not been ordered to obey our parents blindly in Islam. Fair enough. But there's one thing that there's those orders in Islam, and there's certain laws within the creation of the human being, which includes not being successful when you disobey or rebel against your parents. yeah. if they're Muslims. For example, Awais Qarani, he listened to his mother. He went to see the Prophet, peace be upon him, but he left as he's because he promised his mum that he's going to return
mm-hmm.
on a specific time. What I'm trying to say here is that if what you're doing, choosing a wife, may it not be arranged per se, and your parents are also okay with the person or the fact that you are looking at for a spouse by yourself, mm-hmm. provided the guy you're following the guidelines of Islam, then either one is, I think, yeah, suitable.
Well, the West has defined arranged marriage as a bad thing. You know, they've kind of synonymized it with forced marriage. They've kind of made it like that. I'm really happy, alhamdulillah, that my parents chose my spouse for me. I mean, I just pretty much went to them, Mom, Dad, I want to get married, find somebody for me now. There's one thing that we need to give due attention to is that we're thick, aren't we? We're really, really stupid. Human beings are very, very... وَخُلِقَ الْإِنسَانُ ضَعِيفًا. You know, we have created human beings very weak. And so, naturally, when we look for a spouse, we look for those things which Shaitan wants us to look for. You know, looks or wealth or whatever it might be. We're not thinking outside of that. I remember when I got married, this random guy, I was walking in London, random guy, I don't know who he was, he just comes up to me and he goes, did you get married? And I go, yeah, we just got married. And then he goes, parents' choice? I go, yes. He goes, parents' choice? Choice of God. And then he leaves. And I was like, whoa.
No.
Okay. And in London, that's strange. You don't get that many religious people in London, right? Strike that, you do, but not quite like that.
Yeah,
so
no.
It got me thinking, like, how can you make your choices as per what Allah wants? And I feel like this is a really good way to get your parents involved. No?
Yeah, it is. Because, for example, your mum, she might know you much better than you do know yourself, mm-hmm. isn't it? So,
yeah, as much as you might not like to admit it.
I'm going to second you on whatever you said, that they know much better than we do ourselves. And even if you were out looking for a spouse by yourself, and I'd just advise that it's not against the will of your parents.
Ahsant, right. There is this rebellious streak that I feel like people do fall into the trap of, that mainstream media, if you look at any movies, I mean, if you take, like, I don't know, Disney movies, for example, they kind of subconsciously train you that your best possible spouse is the one that your parents don't approve of.
Mm.
Have you seen this theme? It's a recurring theme in romantic movies, wherever you see. It's always this idea that it's not the parents' choice.
Even if they cut out the parents' part, everyone is against what you want. That's something that's there. That everyone is against, even if the character in the movie or whatever it is, doesn't have parents, their best friend, for example, is going to oppose their choice. Or the society, whoever is around him, opposes that choice. But it turns out that, that is the best thing for them.
That's all right, because we're out of time now. We hope that you enjoyed and benefited from the show, dear listeners. Inshallah, we'll see you next time. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.